some tranquility you're experiencing in mind, body. And so with that state of tranquility, I want you to think about all the unwholesome emotions that we feel in our life when we deal with others and ourselves. We want to make a list of all the unwholesome things that we come across because we live among people. Like anger, for example, right? If there was nobody around us, we wouldn't be getting angry, right? So anger is one. We'll quickly just make a list of
betrayal.
Okay. Hatred. Okay.
Frustration.
Frustration.
Jealousy.
That's a good one. Yeah. Anger, hatred, frustration.
Betrayal.
Being egoistic.
Egoistic, absolutely. It's actually a root for everything else. But unless there is somebody else, we don't feel the sense of separation, right? The reason why we feel separate from others because there is somebody else out there. If we were to live on the top of a mountain, all by yourself in a small hut, there's a less chance of being egoistic because there's just you and space out there, not another person. So great. Egoism, narcissism. We're trying to make a list of unwholesome states of consciousness that we experience because we live among people, because we live in the family and envy is one. Jealousy, envy.
Uh-huh.
That's ego. Yeah. How about meanness? Cruelty. Right? Slapping a child or just being mean, you know, being a jerk. I mean, what I'm saying is not just the emotions that we experience in us, but that we see in others also, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure we all have met at least one mean guy in our life, right? So meanness is a real one, real thing. It happens all the time. Anything else?
Selfishness,
the ego thing, yeah?
Pressure.
Competitiveness, how about that? Right?
Ill
will, absolutely. Hatred, somebody said. Yeah. How to deal with all those unwholesome states of consciousness? Love is the answer. Let's go through each emotion that we listed. Ill will, hatred, frustration, anger, what's the answer? Loving kindness, right? We define loving kindness as the ability to see oneself and others worthy of love and kindness. The ability to not harm yourself and others in any shape or manner, right? So when you look at others as worthy of love and kindness, can ill will arise? Only goodwill arises, right? Can hatred arise? Only non-hatred. Can anger arise? How can anger arise towards someone who you think is worthy of your love and kindness? It can't, right? What I'm trying to say is all these unwholesome states that we experience, if we were to practice loving kindness, we would not experience them. Eventually, it's not going to go away overnight. Mind doesn't work that way. It takes consistent effort to change things. But love is the answer to remove those unwholesome states. Then there was meanness, cruelty, right? Are we missing any other? That's it, right?
Ignorance.
Yeah, that's a big one, a deep one. So that's a good, great. So meanness and cruelty. What's the answer? Compassion, right? What's the characteristic of compassion? Being able to see the suffering in yourself, to see the suffering in others, and then having the desire to alleviate that suffering. That's the inherent nature of compassion. So, when somebody is mean to you, it's really nasty, unfair, unjust. If compassion arises, meaning if you see that person's meanness, unjust behavior as his suffering, mental suffering, like a disease, what happens to you? There is no unwholesome thought. Rather, there is a desire to alleviate that suffering. Oh, this person is suffering. He doesn't know what he is doing. Right? When you are established in compassion, when we are established in compassion, there is no room for meanness and cruelty. Now there are two things that are remaining. You said jealousy and envy. So to deal with jealousy and envy, we need the third tool in our arsenal, which is gladness. Gladness is sympathetic joy. And then the competitiveness. Pressure is actually subtly rooted in competitiveness. So competitiveness, jealousy and envy, these three unwholesome states we can eliminate through in our consciousness by practicing gladness, which is also called sympathetic joy or appreciative joy. What that means is we participate in others' success. We become glad when others are successful. We appreciate others' success. There is joy in that. When we train to do that, how can we ever be envious of anybody or feel jealous, right? Especially among cousins, that happens a lot, you know. A lot of competitiveness, even among siblings, you know. If we can appreciate success of our brothers, sisters, neighbors, cousins, there's no room for competitiveness, there's no room for jealousy or envy. So
Can the other person take you for granted, like, she's never jealous, she's never this thing, oh, let's take her for granted, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. let her. Because the inherent nature of compassion, loving kindness, and gladness is to remove that ignorance as well. So sooner or later, the person is going to realize that. It is going to feel your compassion. You know, just like you feel somebody else's anger, right? When I'm angry, you feel it, right? You just don't feel right. When you are in the company of somebody, we say, you know, that guy gives me the creeps, right? Similarly, if you are in compassion, established in compassion, loving kindness and gladness, the other person feels it. It's like fragrance, like the fragrance of the flower, it permeates. And so that will eventually remove that ignorance from the other person. So, and because you're established in loving kindness, compassion and gladness, does it really matter whether other person takes you for granted or not? Because nobody is able to take you for granted because you have now become like an ocean, right? Take as much water as you want, you know. It's not going to deplete your depth. So, So we practice gladness whenever we feel that we are becoming envious or jealous or competitive. And this is a real thing, you know. Mr. Jones, your neighbor, got a $1 million contract. You can actually derive happiness, gladness from his success, literally. When we can do that, we don't have to strive ourselves to become successful. Not that we are not going to strive for excellence or go higher and higher. No, that's not the case. The point is, we don't compete with others. We don't feel pressurized by others' success, trying to catch up, you know? That's the point.
This all makes a lot of sense, and it really does. But the question is, how do you keep reminding me? That's the, you know, I mean, you think about it for a couple of days and you say, yeah, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be compassionate, I'm going to be glad, and you know, and then, you know, a week from now, I'm just thinking about the things that I did last week, and I said, you know, I wish I was more compassionate towards that person, and I wish I did that. And I know this is going to happen, you know. Next time I'm talking to you, you know, I'm going to think the same thing. I wish, you know, I had listened to Sudhir, you know. But how do you keep reminding yourself?
Meditate. The reason we meditate is to develop mindfulness and concentration. So you're constantly in the present moment. You're constantly aware, awake. Right? So that's one thing. Meditation is always the bottom line. Actually, the nature of mindfulness is to facilitate the functioning of memory, by the way. That's the inherent nature of mindfulness.
Actually, a lot of those unwholesome emotions or responses are really reaction.
Exactly. Absence of mindfulness.
Try to go in non-reactive mode.
Right.
It's like ocean mode.
Yeah.
It's difficult, but that, you know, if you consciously take the action, you probably are bound to come up with more wholesome
exactly.
actions.
That's precisely why the practice of meditation here includes four elements: mindfulness, concentration, non-reaction, and wise attention. So as you're constantly training in that, you're simply you're developing that ability to remain aware, awake, all the time. It's not going to happen overnight, but eventually.
So
that's a great question.
It's like you feel like you're making progress, and then it just goes away.
Probably we need a teaching. When you're working, you have this in front of you. Every time, you know, you're getting angry, just look at this and I'm going to. I don't know. I mean, you said this is going to come with meditation. I would think that you're meditating, you know, at the end of the day, you probably are going to be feeling good for that half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you're back, let's say, you know, back working or talking to others, it's difficult to remind yourself.
Of course it is. That's why you meditate regularly. You're developing the faculty of mindfulness. The more you meditate, the more you will be in the present moment, the less you will become reactive. So you will remain aware of these things. Because you have practiced meditation, you have developed the faculty of mindfulness. You see what I'm saying?
No.
No, that's why. Yeah.
You know, the way I'm looking at it is, if you're meditating for half an hour,
right,
you are feeling really good about it for the half an hour, but does that feeling last the next day?
Feeling doesn't last, but you have built up your mindfulness. Meditation is not about, and I don't know if you missed that that Sunday we discussed why we meditate. We meditate to develop higher and higher levels of intelligence. It's not only feeling good kind of thing. What is that higher and higher levels of intelligence? More and more mindfulness, more and more awareness. So half hour you're meditating, you're feeling good. but you have also developed the faculty of mindfulness, which will help you to remember these things. Because that's the nature of mindfulness. It facilitates the functioning of memory. In fact, it also facilitates mental perfection. Which means, once you read this, it becomes part of you. To that extent, you become perfect. Because you have developed that faculty of mindfulness. Why are you observing breath as it comes, goes, in and out, in and out, in and out? That's mindfulness. It's not just breath. Breath is actually just an object. The real task is developing that faculty. Mindfulness, mindfulness, mindfulness. Same thing after meditation, the same faculty will function, right? You'll be aware of your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, others' actions.
I mean, here it's okay to meditate and all. When I try to do it at home, at night, like you say, falling asleep becomes, every time you try to meditate,
right.
I try to fall asleep. And how do you deal with that?
You basically avoid meditating while going in the night.
Some different time.
In the beginning, morning is refresh. You feel kind of fresh in the morning, so you can try in the morning first. And then as you develop your meditative faculty, that strength, then you can meditate in the evening also. And I mean, that's a challenge for everybody, you know, falling asleep. So just, you can wash your face with cold water or take a walk in the woods, come back and try again. Or do a chore which makes you happy, you know, your favorite activity for some time. Even watch TV if you want, science channel or something. Back into meditation.
Go back, basically.
Yeah, you keep trying going back, skillfully. No striving.
Initially, it doesn't have to be that long, right? Because half an hour is going to be really hard.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Slowly you build up.
Yeah. Because with me, I'm always moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard for me to sit still even for 15 minutes.
Right.
So maybe 5 minutes in the beginning.
Which is fine, you know. See, meditation really doesn't mean, quite frankly, you just, no matter what, you just sit there. If you just sit still, but if you're not aware of your breath, what's the point? Right? The main practice is in awareness. So if you cannot sit still, fine, you can move your body, but with awareness. You know, first become aware, okay, I am not able to sit. With that awareness, change your posture. With awareness, I am changing my posture. And then again back into meditation. So even the transition happens with awareness. So even though you are not sitting still, you are meditating. And so slowly, slowly the time builds up. And
but here you are guiding us through, you know, it's a guided meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So can we have like a, you know, that we can record it?
The
because
CD,
I don't know how to get there.
Yeah,
because when
sure.
I come here, I feel like doing more and more. I mean, even 15 minutes. And at home, I just have so many thoughts. So,
right.
I mean, at the guiding. Maybe,
sure.
Like
next one, I could do that. I could actually record and then run a scene.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah, I could do that.
I've seen a lot of parallels between, say, that 15 minutes of meditation and how all these thoughts come or these pains come with the other, you know, 24 hours of the day, how the different stimulus could and we just keep reacting to it.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, what you say in the guidance.
Being mindful and...
Mm-hmm. Be mindful, observe it's coming, and then if you have to take an action rather than just keep reacting to all the stimulus coming at you.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of parallels between that 10 minutes or 15 minutes of meditation to how you could deal with everyday circumstances.
Absolutely. In fact, you could be meditating literally 24 hours a
so
day.
That itself is meditation, although you're not
absolutely
sitting in the pose, but if you're mindful of
yeah
what's coming to you.
You could be meditating while watering your lawn, while cleaning your car, doing your laundry. Just simple things like picking up the clothes, putting it in the washer. I'm picking up the clothes, I'm pushing it in the put it in the water. Now I'm closing the door. You're actually running that mental commentary in your mind. You're practicing mindfulness.
Even doing mantras, is that mindfulness then?
It is a tool to develop mindfulness. But eventually you definitely want to let go of the mantra, so that you focus entirely on mindfulness. It's a fantastic tool, but just like breath. And we will discuss why it is important. Because mantra itself has its own meaning. And that meaning can interfere with your mindfulness activity. And so we have to let go of it eventually.
Instead of focusing on your breath, can you focus on your thoughts?
Absolutely. In fact, that's what will happen once you observe the natural breath. That's why I said, when you start your meditation, you are not breathing intentionally. Only natural breath, you're observing it as a third person. So as the breath becomes more and more tranquilized, you start observing your thoughts as they come and go. So once you start observing your thoughts as they come and go, then slowly you will be able to observe your feelings as they come and go. And then slowly you will be able to observe your moods as they come and go. And then your states of consciousness as they come and go. So, absolutely, that's what we are actually building towards. So in fact, next couple of weekends we will actually do that. Learn how to observe the thoughts. Because they're subtler than breath, right? So it needs a very high level of concentration and mindfulness.
Also trying to clear the thoughts, like have none at all.
Have
no thoughts.
No thoughts? Very simple. Let them come and go. Let them come and go. So you are literally emptying your mind. The thoughts are coming and going. There's this whole storehouse of thoughts, right? Your memories. Those are called volitional formations. They have happened there, accumulated there because karmic actions, you know, your volitional actions. All there. And you could call that collectively the subconscious. Why we are reactive so much? Because we are driven by the forces of the subconscious. We are driven by our memories, you know. So as you observe the thoughts, they come and go from that storehouse. You're literally emptying your mind. You're becoming free from the memories, free from volitional formations. That's called purification of mind. So, well, let's quickly go back to here. So there are only two things remaining. One was ignorance, egoism, narcissism, and then selfishness, right? Those four unwholesome states, use oneness to deal with that. The more and more we're established in oneness, meaning there is no barrier between you and I. You're a human being, I'm a human being, right? And it's actually the fact, it's the reality. So we are not like conditioning the mind with some mental construct. We are staying with the truth, the reality, which is that we are all one, literally, you know. Factually we are one. Even man and woman is also one, human being. Anybody has a counter argument to that? That no, we are separate. It's an illusion.
The social structure makes us feel that we are
separate. Right.
So but it's hard to imagine how we are born. Although I can see what you are.
Just look through. Very simple. Look through. If I were to take your X-ray and my X-ray, what would be the difference? Nothing actually. You're made of bones and flesh and blood and muscles. I'm made of bones and flesh and blood and muscles. Just looking through. all the differences are skin deep. Literally. Literally. You're a Caucasian, I'm an Asian. Remove the skin, everything is same. Would you agree with that? Literally everything you're made of. In fact, our genetic structure is ditto. Literally ditto. This is a very small mutation that has changed the color of your skin, or that has changed things that make us look different, you know. In fact, they say that the genetic code of a fruit fly and us is 2% different. So not only we humans are all same, but we're actually same as a fruit fly, I mean, believe it or not, you know. Forget the fruit fly, a monkey. The Genome Project has established the fact that the difference between the genetic code of monkey and human being is 0.5%, and I'm quoting it. 0.5%. Can you imagine that? And we fight among ourselves, thinking we're different. So.
Well, even the feelings, there's only so many defined feelings, and we all feel them, so. We all feel the same.
Same. Excellent. Excellent point. That's why we all came with only a certain set of unwholesome feelings that we did today, right? We all have experienced them, and they're all same for all, you know. When we are in love, we all feel good. When we are having ill will, we all feel bad. Have you ever felt good when you were angry? Nobody. Because that's the nature of anger. So when we establish ourselves in that understanding, the ignorance goes away. Sense of self goes away. The feeling of separation, you know, that I'm different from somebody else, goes away. And the oneness arises. So if we apply these four elements to our daily life, can you imagine what will happen?
You eliminate suffering, is what you do.
Absolutely. You eliminate pain and suffering. Not only in our lives, but also in others. Ultimately, we are all working towards that, knowingly or unknowingly. We are trying to eradicate suffering from our life, whether you agree or not. So it is profound what you just said. So love is a pragmatic tool to eradicate suffering. Great. So unless you have any questions. We'll enjoy the lunch. Thanks.